Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Welcome to the AEW Rampage Review. I'm Adam Wilborn from What Culture, joined by one of the Dudley Boys, Michael Sidgwick from What Culture, to review everything that happened on Friday night's episode of AEW Rampage. But before we get into it, if you're a fan of this sort of thing, make sure you subscribe to What Culture Wrestling on either iTunes, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts from, for daily wrestling podcasts where we not only review AEW Rampage, but also AEW Dynamite, Raw, SmackDown, NXT 2.0 pay-per-views. We have interviews, roundtable discussions, and a roundup of the week complete with a bigger quiz, of course, on wrestle culture. As I said, though, joined by Sidgwick to review AEW Rampage, a show dominated by one match, basically.
Yes, absolutely. This was the Hook Show. The Hook Show was great. Hook is an incredible prospect. The presentation was immaculate. The first match was great. I even had time for the main event. Mostly, this is a very, very good show of pro wrestling television.
Yeah, really enjoyed this. You know, we'd heard about the buzz in the week, obviously, what with it being taped after Dynamite. We discussed it on the preview. We'd seen clips of his entrance from fan footage, etc. And then I wasn't able to watch the match until Sunday evening. I'd seen some of your tweets, some of Andy's tweets, and didn't really want to read too much of them to not spoil any of it for myself. But I had very, very high expectations, understandably. And holy... he far exceeded them. We'll talk about it. We'll get to it when we get to his match. Let's start at the beginning of the show. It opened, no messing about, both teams in the ring with the AEW Tag Team Championships on the line. And thank goodness, Michael Sidgwick, we finally got a great Lucha Bros versus FTR match, because we've always been really hopeful for these two teams. And it just never seemed to really gel until I thought Friday night.
Yeah, they've had three matches before this, the first of which was at Fyter Fest 2020, where it just didn't happen at all. Like, really clunky botches, chemistry issues. There was obviously some good wrestling within all that, but I remember thinking, Jesus Christ, what a massive disappointment that was. They had a second match. They'd obviously worked together really well in an eight-man as well around that time. They had a second match, which was just a gimmick match when it was Super Ranas. Which, again, he had a glimpse of what the match could be, but it was essentially a match, an angle masquerading as a match. Mm. They were at Full Gear, some excellent spots, but just moments of, like, clunky miscommunication, timing errors, peaked before the finish. It just, even this match had three or four moments where I'm thinking, oh, come on, lads, where, for example, when the Lucha Bros were attempting a double team, there was, like, time stood still, and when it's wrestled at such a clip, when there's any kind of a standstill, it kind of is all the more deflating.
Yeah.
I think it was the spot where Penta was trying to get Phoenix to jump onto his shoulders so he could do the frog splash off his shoulders. The actual execution of the move itself was phenomenal. It looked like Dax Harwood, I think it was, taking that one. Looked incredibly winded, which is the whole point of a diving attack delivered to the abdomen. But you had to see Penta, like, go... like, nod, like, now, come on, I know it. So two or three moments like that. Like, I still think they've got a better match in them. This is certainly very, very great and the best one they've had so far. I've wanted this match to happen and it happened.
Yeah, it was. I mean, credit to them, like you say, they've got it together and they made me want to see the 2 out of 3 falls match. Now we've had this one. Let's talk about the match itself. Phoenix and Dax Harwood start off. Cash Wheeler immediately tries to run in and interfere, but Phoenix takes both of them out. Then we got that spot quite early on, like you say, with Penta coming in, Phoenix coming off his shoulders for a splash. Penta's doing the whole glove gimmick. Wheeler interrupts it, and then they go back and forth, and then Penta chucks his glove in the air. Wheeler concentrates on catching that, and then eats a super kick.
That was class. I popped my tits off.
Phoenix comes in off a blind tag, crossbody block, sends him out of the ring. Harwood then throws Phoenix into the ring apron on the outside. FTR then take control. Wheeler hits the assisted leg drop on Phoenix for a nice near fall. Harwood goes up top, surprisingly, at that point, but Phoenix catches him with a forearm and hits a jumping rana to take us into break. When we come back, Phoenix eventually gets out of the FTR onslaught to make the hot tag to Penta, who takes both members down of FTR with sling blades, a long blower on Dax Harwood. He hit Wheeler with Made in Japan for a nice two count. Phoenix tries to go up top for the spike pile driver, but Tully Blanchard tries to run interference. So Phoenix catches him, trying to swing for him, and knocks him down to the floor. Harwood hit a slingshot Liger bomb on Phoenix for a great near fall again. Wheeler then tries to hit Phoenix with one of the title belts, but Phoenix catches him. And in the tug of war, Wheeler accidentally clocks Harwood as Phoenix wrestles it away from him. Then Phoenix goes up top to hit the frog splash, but in the time it takes, Harwood's recovered and gets the belt on Phoenix as he makes the jump. And then he gets a near fall off the back of that. Phoenix comes off the top again onto Harwood, but he gets hit with a big rig for what I thought was the finish, to be perfectly honest. Fantastic two count. Penta breaks it up by flying off the top rope into Harwood, I believe, into the pile. Then they all stand toe-to-toe in the middle of the ring and just start twatting each other as much as they could. Phoenix hits a rolling cutter on Harwood, then goes for one on Cash Wheeler, who counters him into a fantastic gory bomb that I saw you singing the praises of on Twitter, Sige. Penta goes for the package pile driver on Cash Wheeler. He escapes, but they eventually manage to team up to hit Fear Factor on Wheeler. Phoenix topes out of the ring onto Harwood to make sure he can't break up the pinfall. 1, 2, 3. The Lucha Bros retain the tag titles.
Yeah, like 95% of this was totally fantastic. Just to be fair and reasoned, 5% of it was somewhat affected by the same kind of chemistry and timing issues that has weirdly afflicted this dynamic since they've first stood in opposite corners of the ring. That big rig near fall would have been so much better had they actually nailed the move itself. Mm. They didn't quite get there. There was another moment when they were trying to FTR position Phoenix to get him to flip over their heads, duck under them, and then do the hot tag before the sling blades. That was a little bit messy and a little bit sloppy, but everything else in the match was fantastic.
A gory bomb.
Yeah. The actual flow wasn't disrupted. There was like just a few tiny glitches, not like an uneven, disjointed quality to the flow of the match, which has affected this pairing before. Just glitches, not disjointed botches outright. That gory bomb was incredible. If you go and watch it, even Phoenix, who's one of the best wrestlers and certainly the most exciting wrestlers, but also one of the very best all-round in-ring pro wrestlers on the planet, even he has a tendency to do the flying nothing.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
It's great when he gets super kicked because he can properly pretend his ankles have been shattered backwards in on themselves. But even he's capable of doing a flying nothing. A flying nothing is, as you know, or if you don't know, it's when a wrestler's about to launch into an aerial attack, but it's not actually looking like they're attacking anything. They just want to facilitate getting kicked in the face or something.
Yeah, diving headfirst off the top rope when you never hit a diving headbutt, for example, and then I've been caught into an RKO.
Yeah, like that exact kind of thing. This was the opposite of a flying nothing because he was going to do this roll through into a cutter. You can actually see his arms motion to drive Cash Wheeler's head to the canvas, and that made the actual subsequent reversal all the better. Cash Wheeler's timing was phenomenal. I feel like I'm just writing an audio love letter to that guy right now on these podcasts. He catches the arms that are meant for the back of his head with his arms, turns around and kills the guy face chest first with the gory bomb. And if you watch it again, I watched this about 20 freaking times. It was such a great spot. Phoenix, knowing that he's trapped and he's defenseless and he's going to get his head caved in, just shakes his head frantically from side to side because it's the only body part he can do. Like, no. Incredible. Cash Wheeler, did a similar kind of sell just before he was about to take Made in Japan. Yeah. Like his frantic flailing of, oh, I'm knackered here, registers the impact of the move before that impact looks absolutely incredible. The timing of the belt stuff was phenomenal as well. I love the callback to the very first match. Mm-hmm. Well, not the first. The first match they had in 2021 was great because he genuinely thought that it was so well timed because Rick Knox, he didn't know who'd hit him with the belt, so he couldn't do anything about it. And Dax Harwood's belt shot for the subsequent frog splash reversal was just great. The whole thing flowed tremendously, other than those aforementioned glitches. And what I loved most about it was genuinely the drama was totally electrifying. Like, you thought within half a second of every reversal that the finish was going to be executed in either direction in the favor of either team. Just palpitations ensued from the fact that the reversals were 2.999. It was all tremendous, mostly.
You've just reminded me there, we do need to take a pause in this review to submit an apology, a sincere apology from myself, Michael Sidgwick, and I'll be honest, all of us here at What Culture Wrestling. We made a fatal error, and it's inexcusable, if I'm honest. On Friday, myself and Michael Sidgwick were reviewing, or previewing, I should say, Rampage, and as part of that discussion with Hook making his in-ring debut, the decision was made by myself and the production team to talk about absolute pieces in AEW. And I'm not ashamed to admit it. You know, we made a really big mistake. So to Wardlow, I'm so sorry.
Yes.
How did we miss him?
I just had, like, you know, when you get like a flood of a feeling, like pretty much all day today because the news is awful. Pretty much all day, I'm refreshing BBC, I'm trying to get my friggin' booster jab, and I'm just thinking, oh, Christ, it's just in the pit of your stomach of, oh, when am I not going to feel like this?
Yeah.
It'd be so awesome at some point to not feel like this. When someone said, oh, why didn't you mention Wardlow in your absolute pieces discussion? Legitimately, I was like, oh, man.
I got a push notification on my phone to you responding to whoever, thank you very much for whoever, I mean, many of you did, but whoever first pointed this out. And I just saw a tweet that said, Michael Sidgwick replied, I'm so sorry for this. And I was like, what have we done? And then it was even worse than what I anticipated. So apologies to any AEW fans, particularly any Wardlow fans, and particularly Wardlow, because yes, obviously, he's in that discussion.
There are too many super hunks.
Exactly. We are spoilt for choice.
I feel like I can waste the court's time by raiding the super hunks.
Right, anyway, let's move on and talk about the trios match that came next. It was Ruby Soho, Anna Jay and Tay Conti versus Nyla Rose, The Bunny and Penelope Ford. I don't really know why this match went on so long, if I'm perfectly honest. There was a lot of stuff to cram into this show, and I felt maybe the time could have been utilised better elsewhere. But it certainly served a purpose in terms of just reminding you, oh, yeah. I mean, with or without shenanigans like we got here, Nyla Rose is a fucking killer. Early on, Bunny gets caught in the face corner. She gets triple teamed. Conti comes in, hits a pump kick on Bunny, locks in a guillotine. But as they're making their escape from that, Vicky Guerrero's in the heels corner, trips Conti against the ropes. That allows Penelope Ford to come in. Big boot. The heels take over at that point. Nyla Rose comes in and just batters Conti into the corner. Soho comes in after a while, after Conti manages to make it to her corner. She takes down Penelope Ford with a clothesline and a leg sweep. But again, Rose comes in and gets the heat on Soho to take us to the break. When we come back from the break, Anna Jay's just got the hot tag. She comes in, she's going after Nyla Rose, tries to finish her with a sleeper, but Bunny comes in, breaks that up with a super kick. And there's just a series of big moves. Conti hits Bunny with the take AO. Rose takes out Conti with a hanging neck breaker. Soho hits the no future on Rose. And then Ford takes out Soho with a hook kick. Jay suplexes Ford. And during all this, Vicky Guerrero's slip Bunny the brass knucks, which she uses on Anna Jay. Conti takes out the Bunny. But basically, there's a woozy Anna Jay and Nyla Rose in there. She bursts her on the canvas with a beast bomb, basically gets the victory and is rolling towards the anticipated match in the TBS title tournament.
Yes, absolutely. I enjoyed this far more as a showcase for Nyla Rose than I did as a match itself. It wasn't actively bad. A few moments of miscommunications, which again are always exposed so much more badly in a trios match because it disrupts the flow. It was a bit when Ty Conti was trying to get, I think it was the bunny, out of the ring to create space for their respective partners to do some stuff in the match, and it created a sense of like chaos and it all falling apart, but it felt all too literal. Like, took them ages to get out of the ring. The idea was like the sheer fury of Ty Conti was trying to power them both out of the ring. Just felt like I was struggling on the ropes for ages, just little immersion breaking moments. Look, this match was designed to give Nyla Rose a victory and the illusion of her being the favourite ahead of the semi-final. It accomplished that. Nyla Rose is always great. I thought she was individually very good here. I say this quite often, but it is a helpful barometer of what a good or memorable match is when we, because of our working patterns, we watch this at some point over the weekend. Mm-hmm. I'm a nerd. I watch it as soon as I'm up on Saturday morning. And then we review it on a Monday afternoon. And I can't remember much of this at all. Mm. Just, yeah, I didn't really do anything.
Yeah, I watched this Sunday night and all I can vividly remember now is the parade of big moves, that shot with the brass knucks, and then the finish. And I really don't need to see Anna Jay and take on Penelope Ford and the funny bunny for quite some time after this.
Christ almighty, yeah. It's just incredibly WWE stuff.
It's Matt Hardy and Orange Cassidy. This feud must continue.
I mean, that one hasn't.
Please no, yes.
Yeah, it didn't do much for me. Let's get a hook.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Well, before we get there, we had a backstage interview. Well, we were attempting to have a backstage interview, surprise, surprise, with Sting and Darby Allin. But before we can get anywhere near that, in comes FTR and Tully Blanchard to jump both of them. Darby Allin gets chucked into a loading bay door. They're initially trying to take out Sting. Darby Allin makes the save, but he gets taken out, as I said, by FTR. And then they hold Sting up a second time. Tully Blanchard just nails him with a low blow and says the line one more time. They couldn't, could they?
Well, they're going to. the first match at Grand Slam was, quite frankly, incredible, given how old Sting is and how much he actually did in the match. Darby Allin wasn't really that much of a factor in it. It was the Sting show. I expect this to be the Sting show again because I have a feeling they're going to book this for the Greensboro Coliseum, mm-hmm. which I think they're scheduled for. For December the 22nd, Sting's obviously got incredible history in that particular venue, which makes me wonder why they're going with this again, because Sting and Darby won the first match. As much as I love them as a team. And again, like, they can go for a tag team title match. Like, why the hell not? They're a class tag team who've had loads of class matches. And if they don't hit that, like, 25-minute, quote-unquote, five-star standard, they'll get more noise than anybody else. More emotional investment than anybody else. It's friggin' Sting and Darby Allin. They're great. Maybe it's a way of reheating FTR. I don't know how to call that outcome. That is something we can cover in the preview. But I don't hate the direction whatsoever because I thought FTR did such an absolutely magnificent job with Sting that this match will be excellent as well.
And it was nice, like you say, to see them think, what's next for FTR without having them just disappear for a bit? Because they're so talented. And obviously, you're transitioning them out of the title picture now. We've talked at length about Jurassic Express getting involved in there now. But yeah, immediately have them being like, oh, bollocks, we lost that. Well, kill the old guy now instead.
FTR were just so great in that match that even if it goes ultimately 50-50, I couldn't give a toss. Like Dax Harwood positioning Sting for the Tombstone pile driver and doing the throat slit gesture as if to say, you're not the fucking Undertaker, even though you get compared to each other. That was a great spot. Obviously, all the NWO gear, all of it was absolutely tremendous. It's weird that we're getting round two, but I'm not in favour of it.
Right, it is finally time, Michael Sidgwick, for quite possibly the best AEW in-ring debut ever. Hook's in-ring AEW debut against Fuego del Sol. I'm reliably informed this was only about three and a half minutes. I mean, I dread to think how much time we've actually dedicated to watching this match between the two of us.
I'm on at least 12 so far.
Hook's entrance music, we talked about it before, but we didn't really want to spoil it for everyone by talking about it at a length. Action Bronson, perfect, funny. The crowd, huge reaction for him.
Huge pop.
The way it was presented with we'd seen, like I said, the fan footage. We hadn't seen the camera angles with just the black screens. Then Hook appears, Action Bronson, and he just swaggers out to the ring. His hair somehow perfect and unmoving. Early on, we'd been reliably informed, this is great from people who were there and what have you, but you mentioned before about potential bias of like, this is match of the year, was it? Or were you just happy to watch something?
I don't begrudge them, by the way.
No, absolutely not. I mean, I'm angry that we don't get to go to any AEW shows that regularly.
You thought Iconics at WrestleMania 35 was the match of the year, so you can't begrudge these people.
What was that about Kofi and Bryan? Nah, you're right. What about I can't remember the tag, blind tag, wasn't it? Iconics illegal. Anyway, yes, like I said, please don't suck. And please don't make it like, right now, here's my arm and I'm going to fit. Nope. He's just fantastic on the mat. Judo throws to Fuego del Sol. Credit to Fuego del Sol. We mentioned this on the news, by the way. I think he worked perfectly with him here. Judo throws. Taz is just exploding on commentary. Nails him with some body shots. Hits a sort of crotch lift suplex to a huge bap again. I did feel a little bit sorry for Fuego. He mounts the smallest of comebacks. Crowd like, boo! No! Not this guy! It's like, you've got to give him something. It's not a complete squash. But as he goes for the tornado DDT, Hook just stops him in his tracks, holds him in place, chucks him like a sack of trash to the mat, and then hits this brilliant, flipping, as in Fuego del Sol flipped as he took it, this lariat and an overhead suplex. And I tweeted this clip because I just loved the proud dad of like, see boys, this is what I've been telling you. He says something like that, Taz. He couldn't believe what he was seeing. Such a proud dad. There's obviously that photo that we saw on Squared Circle of him applauding his son to the ring. And then Hook locks in the Katahajime. Taz mission. It's basically a Taz mission. He gets the legs in first, which is great. Nice, legit sort of MMA thing of like, right, well, you're not going anywhere. Now I've just got to fight the hands. Yeah, gets the submission victory. And as I pointed out to you, I think it was a complete accident, but he didn't release the hold until Action Bronson hit, basically. He's got like a little musical intro, then Action Bronson comes in, and it weirdly timed out perfectly for that. But he doesn't even wait to get his hand raised. Just like, well, that's that done. See you later, boys, and just walks out. And Twitter explodes, understandably, as a result.
Indeed. Something happens when I get really high on an AEW development, and I'm sure the mega fans will forgive me. I get so giddy that I decide to just give away my podcast thoughts in Twitter form with like five tweets all at once. So I want the takes, I want the validation for the takes, I want to put them over, I want all of it. In the way he controlled his body, I'm not expecting him to pull off a Black Arrow, nor, given the pro wrestler that he is, should he. But in terms of his ring style and the extent to which I was just mesmerized by how athletic he was, you can tell he's like a college lacrosse player. What a like a hard game that must be to play at that level. So between his presence, his aesthetic, his sheer intangible cool factor, the way he can move his body around those drop steps, and one incredible spot where Fuego's about to hip toss him, and he just does it sideways, but lands on his feet as well. And his working style, he is the essence of Taz and Pac in the vessel of, like, James Dean, 50s teenage heartthrob. Yes. Jesus Christ, this kid is unbelievable. That spot where he landed on his feet from the hip toss, but, like, the rotation was odd. It wasn't just, because I've seen a million. I've seen Marty Jannetty's to be my favorite spot. He would get hip tossed, land on his feet, and then take the advantage. But it was from, like, a sideways position. He just found his feet instantly. Like, the level of body control was legitimately Pac-esque. And another take that I'm sorry I just gave away on Twitter in a fit of giddy excitement, like the mark that I am. Like, he looked like Fuego looked like he could do nothing. And what I mean by that is the grappling ability of Hook was just incredible. Like, how he just kicked his calf away from his body and just pressed him to the ground. He
about bow and arrow submission.
Like a bow and arrow submission. Feet boom down to the ground. Like lifting people off their feet. That ridge hand chop was incredible. I don't know how he can do that and not look silly. But beneath the if we're trying to get this over, like, great win, as we said, great look, great little match and everything. He's trying to chart his progression as a pro wrestler. He's got an enormous advantage having clearly an incredible judo background. Like, the way he could pop those hips to just get Fuego to go over his hips and slam down to the mat. That was great. The ridge hand chop was great.
I like the bit where he's right before the submission, he's sort of messing with the mask. I'm not sure if he sort of brought it down slightly over the eyes. But either way, he was not seeing those forehand smashes coming.
That's
all up.
The only flaw I had in the match. There was one bit where, but just before I put that under, I'll put him over again. So it's one thing for him to do his judo stuff and to fold that into his pro wrestling, which he did impeccably. Look at his worked punches to the corner. Like, they look great. And, like, he can teach a worked punch. It's not something anyone can do. You have to be a great wrestler to be able to throw a great worked punch, and he did that excellently in the corner. Two tiny flaws in his game. This is literally his first actual match.
Yes.
So don't, like, jump down my throat for pointing this out. Every wrestler's got to work on something, even the greats. There was a moment where he was selling for Fuego, and he was kind of, like, strolling almost to the corner. Like, that's something that he'll pick up and learn how to do more. There's obviously nothing wrong with his movement or his athleticism. He's an incredible young athlete. But there was a time when he just didn't know where to put himself or how quickly to put himself there. So that was one flaw. And the other one with those forearms, I remember he registered what he was about to do great. He'd already killed Fuego del Sol enough to the point where a dread descended of, oh, Christ, Fuego's in trouble. He commanded and engineered that sense of dread. He justified getting that reaction by killing Fuego very effectively in the first 2.5 minutes. But when he actually did the forearms, it looked like he was a little bit hesitant to go all the way. Mm-hmm. Better that than being a clumsy Nia Jax bastard. But come on, put a little bit more hook on those. The actual application of the Kata Hajime was great. Red Rum, sorry, Taz was very insistent that we call it Red Rum, so we will, in fact, call it Red Rum. A 9.8 on Pitchfork.
Yeah, just wonderful. And I don't normally care about these sort of things. I did like reading all the Vince. I was being like, well, he's young and he's too small. And so just, you know, just be, like, we're not saying this person will beat Roman Reigns up. Just be happy.
Yes.
I don't get it.
We've got unfulfilled lives.
Yeah.
I feel sorry for them, I do.
But yeah, fantastic.
No, all of Twitter is a group of grown men who realistically should be criticizing in good faith the bad and sharing our knowledge of the good. Illuminate to me why someone's good. I will try and do the same. What we shouldn't do is dunk on Jobber Nation TV's rubbish takes. That's essentially what it is. He doesn't believe these things. He's what is called a troll.
Yeah. Anyway, before
we're luring ourselves and we're ruining the discourse. He's not ruining it. There's always going to be a Jobber Nation TV.
Yeah.
We're ruining it by trying to dunk. You're wrong for this reason. That's not an insight.
Yeah.
That's not a brutal takedown of this faceless avatar. The correct responses to his takes are not insightful. They're obvious. Don't lower yourselves to it.
Mm. We have the back and forth usual stuff here between the super click and the best friends. All I remember is them getting angry when, Trent wanted to talk at one point. But Wheeler Utah stole Adam Cole's bebe and he was not best pleased about it, which was very, very entertaining. But following that and following the usual shouting match.
Well, looks like we've had enough talk. It's time for the main event.
They've started this new thing, haven't they, now, where...
It doesn't say well anymore.
Well, he has to be like, guys, I've got to do the thing to set us up. And they're arguing back and forth, basically. But it was time for Adam Cole versus Wheeler Utah. And the story of this match, I suppose, was Adam Cole taking Wheeler Utah far too lightly. And he thought he'd just batter him and really make a statement. He's directing, obviously, a lot of this towards Orange Cassidy. So early on, Adam Cole does take control because he's Adam Cole. But Utah manages to block a cradle, gets a pin, gets a near fall off the back of it. Then he walks straight into a super kick. Adam Cole again takes over. He suplexes him, mocks Cassidy, as we sort of called on the preview. Wheeler Utah does make a comeback, though. He surprises Cole with some near falls. Cole's just getting wound up by all this. Pump kicks him, neck break off the back of a fireman's carry, dumps him out to the floor and just stares down Orange Cassidy. When they get back in, Cole thinks he's got the match won. He sets up, goes for the Panama Sunrise. But Wheeler Utah counters that, sits down on it, sits into a pinfall attempt, gets another near fall after a top rope crossbody. Top rope forearm as well for another near fall. He looks like maybe he's got a chance here. But as he goes for a German suplex, Cole blocks it. Enziguri. Again, Cole thinks he's got it sort of won. But Utah comes back with a German suplex for a near fall. Utah even caught Cole with a modified Olympic slam. Goes for a top rope splash. But Cole gets his knees up. Utah gets hit with a super kick and then lowers the Adam Cole lowers the boom to get the pinfall victory.
As I've said a few times over the past month or two, I've stopped engaging with obviously bad faith takes. Mm-hmm. It's a waste of everyone's time. There is, however, a kind of a good faith argument that are they getting the most out of Adam Cole? Mm-hmm. Or does that mean the fact that he's in mid-card and upper mid-card feuds and not like an instant Daniel Bryan-esque figure? Mm-hmm. Notwithstanding the fact that you can't have too many people in the main event, whatever. I think there's a decent, rare, good faith debate to be had over mm-hmm. the positioning of Adam Cole. The feud he's currently embroiled in has me thinking that, funnily enough, Tony Khan knows what he's doing.
Mm-hmm.
Adam Cole at some point is going to do something major with Adam Cole and or with Kenny Omega and or Hangman Page. And I think he's got a big title shot on his horizon that we have to pay for before we do with MGF and Punk. It's all about what someone does in the meantime. And in the meantime, he's in a filler, whatever you want to call it, upper mid-card feud to do something that functions to fill television time, give him some wins in the process, quietly build him. That's what you do with a star in a main event, you build him. So this is how they're building him. And I think the way they're building Adam Cole at the minute is quietly low-key tremendous. Notwithstanding the fact that the guy, not for the first time, has just main-evented a nationally televised cable TV show.
Yes.
That in itself is a pretty good indication that they want to push him and they want you to think that he's getting pushed and it's someone to take seriously. They've realised, right, what's Adam Cole brilliant at, right, as a heel particularly? He's got the best facial expressions in wrestling, quite possibly. Who can we program Adam Cole with to get the best out of that wonderful shock and incredulity that someone could dare challenge the great, incredibly arrogant Adam Cole? Well, we've got Orange Cassidy, who's bollocks or bullsh, even though it's a strategy, will piss Adam Cole off sufficiently so that he can do these wonderful faces. Wheeler Utah, being in Best Friends, is another great stepping stone for Adam Cole to get to Orange Cassidy, the singles match of which will be great, because Wheeler Utah has this ring style that means that he outwits people. Like he does a lot of feints, does Wheeler Utah. So he feigns to do something, catches his opponents unaware, doesn't in fact do the move that he's feigning to do, and then lands him with another move. Adam Cole's reactions to all of this sort of slippery, feigned stuff from Wheeler Yuta were great because he's got a great face. They are getting the most out of Adam Cole's brilliant face with this sort of comedy-flavoured upper mid-card feud that I think is incredibly entertaining before Adam Cole does, quote-unquote, really serious business.
Yeah, he could be doing a lot worse in terms of keeping him busy before you launch him in the year.
Again, we've just seen Kenny Omega and Hangman Page finalise a two-year story. These are the parameters of the big AEW character arcs. Adam Cole has been in the company since only August. Like, these people, and I don't know when certain fans, I can understand, like, the ones in bad faith because they live an unfulfilled life. But even the ones who are in good faith, a little bit anxious about Adam Cole and whether or not he's going to be this big star or feel as big as he was in NXT at its 2019 quote-unquote peak. Like, AEW booking thinks in years, not just in months or weeks, years. And at some point, it would be nice if people could recalibrate their minds and just think, like, the existence of WWE being terrible for so long doesn't mean AEW is going to follow down the same path.
He's not lost a singles match, has he? I mean, he lost that match, obviously, with the Young Bucks for the pay-per-view, but he didn't take the fall, and he's not lost
Didn't take the fall, hasn't lost a singles match.
And he's going to, you know, he's going to have some fantastic near falls with Orange Cassidy, where he's going to think, like, I've got this dickhead beat.
Yeah.
And then suddenly he's going to get caught. Oh, bollocks, bollocks, bollocks.
That match will be over as all hell. It'll be entertaining as all hell. It'll be slyly, incredibly well-crafted. Just enjoy Cole versus Cassidy. You're going to see Adam Cole's brilliant face.
We got one step closer to it after the match as well. A bit of a standoff between what's left of the Best Friends and the Superclique following this match. But Bobby Fish pulls Trent out of the ring, chucks him into the steps, and that allows them to beat down the rest of the Best Friends. Cassidy is left isolated in the middle of the ring, and the Young Bucks hold him up, and Cole sets up for doing something huge. What's he going to do? And then he just punches him in the cock, basically. Yes. And then they all hit the BTE trigger on Trent, who's just come back from all the spine stuff, of course, to end the show as real bastards.
Yes. Is there a heel turn coming for Trent, or is his general demeanour just a bit of a knob? Like, I've always thought, like, this was Trent. On the
beforehand when he's like, shouldn't I be talking now? Yeah. So I've just come back.
I don't know if that's just his irreverent sense of humour. Because he's the deadpan guy with a bit of an edge to him in Best Friends, I suppose. But I thought it was pronounced that he was the one who was sort of left to get BTE triggered. And he was the one saying, like, oh, why is it about Wheeler Yuta when I've just come back and, you know, I'm better than him? Because Wheeler Yuta is essentially his sort of temporary replacement, if you like. But that's the thing with Trent. He's over as all hell. People really like Best Friends as a mid-card act. So maybe I'm barking down the wrong tree or whatever the friggin' expression is. But yeah, I didn't know if there was something that Trent potentially turning, and I'm not against that direction whatsoever.
Yeah, I would love to see him do some single stuff. Don't know whether it's going to take a heel turn to do that, but we'll keep an eye on it, as with the developments between the Best Friends and the Superclique. But let us know your thoughts on AEW Rampage on Twitter at WhatCultureWWE. Well, actually, you can follow both of us. You can follow Michael Sidgwick at
MSidgwick.
You can follow me at Adam Wilbur. Follow us all at WhatCultureWWE, as I said. Make sure you subscribe to What Culture Wrestling, wherever you get your podcasts from, for daily wrestling podcasts. I've got the Winter is Coming preview coming later on this week. Already available right now is our SmackDown review from earlier on today. And we'll be back later on with a Monday Night Raw preview too. But for now, this has been the Rampage Review. My thanks to Michael Sidgwick. Thank you for joining us. And we will see you soon.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.